ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 124 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm really glad you're listening because I have a fun interview with the creators of the new Go-Getters comic from monkeybraincomics.com. I get to talk with Sean Aldridge and Christopher Peterson about the creative new book coming out from one of my very favorite comic sources. We talk about how the book came to be and about the characters and what they have in mind for us in the future. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the podcast Sean Aldridge of Vic Boone fame and also Christopher Peterson. The two of them are working on a successful book called Go-Getters, which has gotten a lot of attention. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing really well.
Good. And you, Chris?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good. Well, why don't we start out? Sean, I guess I'll talk with you about the concept for Go-Getters. Mm-hmm. How did Go-Getters get started?
Well, it came about from a sketch that Christopher had done. I don't know when, Chris.
A long time ago. Well, a couple sketches, yeah.
But that was just simply a girl and a gorilla. And then when the time came to pitch something for Monkey Brain, we threw around a couple of concepts. Nothing clicked, really. And then I remembered that sketch and asked Chris to send it. And then from there, we just sort of started bouncing around, you know, ideas back and forth about what we wanted to do. And, yeah, and just built sort of the foundation off that sketch, oddly enough. So maybe in a backwards way. And I think we both wanted to do something fun and for our kids, you know. I mean, mine's only two. He's not reading level yet, but something that he could read at some point in his life prior to turning, you know, 18 or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chris, where did the concept come from that the sketch came out of?
You might as well throw it out there. I think at this point it's
sort of a weird story. I mean, my original previous idea was I was just fooling around with people, like, aging, growing up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And one was sort of finding different adventurers, like, I don't know what you call it, like, you know, Indiana Jones and stuff like that. So I just thought of, you know, a different character, and they needed just some sort of sidekick, I guess. And I think at the time, I'm sure my daughter watching, like, Dora the Explorer a lot kind of, like, influenced that a bit. So I think we kind of throw a little bit of a nod to it here and there sometimes. But yeah, just fun adventure, and that's about it, I guess. For, you know.
Okay, we've got two characters. You got Maya Diaz, the female of the bunch, and then you've also got the giant white gorilla named George Harrison, mm-hmm. which is an interesting choice. Now, which one is the main character and which one's the sidekick?
It's interesting. A lot of people seem to be leaning towards George Harrison as the main guy and sort of Maya as the sidekick. Mm-hmm. And I think when we built the base for him and stuff, we never really approached it as, or at least I in the writing always approached them as equal footing characters. You know, it's sort of the, in a way, I mean, it owes a little bit, say, more to buddy cop films than, say, you know, Batman Robin, you know, where one's sort of the, Maya, if you were to ask Maya, obviously she would say that George Harrison is the sidekick and she's the lead. But there's certain, you know, situations and stuff, you can sort of see that it's, you know, George Harrison sort of the one that, oddly enough, has the clearer head on his shoulders.
Okay, that's interesting, because how about the title, Go-Getters? I mean, where did that come from?
I like the words. I don't know. It's hard to say whether the title came first or the reason for the title, or sort of building a reason why that was the title, I should say. I think when I was, we were bouncing around ideas that, you know, we wanted them to be able to essentially go anywhere, mm-hmm. you know? And so I was like, well, you know, let's think about, you know, retrieving stuff. And I was like, I didn't really want them to be, you know, I wanted to avoid the Indiana Jones where they're always looking for these lost, you know, legendary items and whatnot, or even Tomb Raider to an extent where there's always some sort of, you know, mystic idol, you know, statue or something. I just wanted them to be, I was just like, whatever, you know, if it's, mm-hmm. if somebody misses a top hat, loses a top hat, you can call them and they'll go find it for you, you know? And I think that's just a little, you know, why confine yourself to, you know, trinkets and such. And so I think maybe retrieval and then go-getters, you know, because they go get stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
that works fine. I honestly, you know, I got to read the first book, and I didn't realize, Sean, at the time when I was reading it, you were involved with it.
Oh, crazy.
So I was reading it over, and all of a sudden I thought, man, this feels like almost like Vic Boone to me on some level. And all of a sudden I looked at the who was writing it, and I thought, holy smoke, I said, no wonder it feels a little like that. Because you tend to write these sort of freewheeling, inventive, sort of creative things that go on, and you're never exactly sure what happens when you turn the page. So I kind of like that. And I like your art too, Chris, because it fits the tone very well. I think it's kind of good. You make us believe that gorilla is actually doing the things that he's doing. So I really like that.
Okay.
So it's been good. Now, it just came out from Monkey Brain Comics, what, like a week or two back?
Yeah, I think it's been two weeks now.
Yeah.
And you've obviously gotten a lot of reaction. I was surprised. I was interested with Sean when you, I think it was a tweet that came out and said there was these, somebody at Goodreads had recommended it. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't, because I never see comics on Goodreads. I was really surprised.
Yeah, I was shocked too. You know, you do when you put out something. You know, you'll do a Google search every, you know, couple of days, or I'll do one once a day because it makes it easier because I can look, you know, what's been posted in the last 24 hours and it narrows it down. You know, I'm not weeding through 20 pages. But you're always interested in finding out like what anybody says, you know, be it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, reviewers or whatnot. And so sometimes you'll find comments, and then that was one of the things that popped up, and I was like, this seems, I was like, I must be talking about a book entitled Go-Getters, and it just, you know, Googled it and filtered it out and then looked. And yeah, it was actually sort of a really small, nice little, you know, this book is mm-hmm. fun, the art's great.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of stuff, and
they gave it 4.5 stars out of 5, which was pretty good.
Yeah, which you know, Goodreads is a tough circle, you know, mm-hmm. so it seemed, you know.
Yeah, very good. So I think that's really cool. Now, as far as the story goes, and we dive right in the very beginning of things, they're looking for a double eagle, the only one in existence.
It's the only legal one to. Save somebody the wiki link, I guess, or Wikipedia, I should say. So there was a set of coins made back in, it doesn't matter, that were, you know, put out by the U.S. government, and they were solid gold, and they were called the Double Eagle, you know. Well, essentially, shortly after them being released, the government's like, oh no, we need to save our gold. All these need to be melted back down. So only a few snuck out. And so then it became illegal for you to own them. If you had it, you had to turn it into the treasury. And everybody's sitting at home going, like, this is the most boring idea ever. But, but anyway.
That's the worst idea ever.
Yeah, it's like, why do we care about this coin? So to get to the chase, there's one, actually, and this is all true, you know, you can look it up, that is legal to own. Because of the way it worked out, they essentially gave that coin a pardon, you know, because it was sold once. And it ties back into the first issue, like the last sort of owner of it before it sort of made its way back into to the United States was an Egyptian king, you know. Not like old school pharaohs, but, you know, sort of the fez hat wearing kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things in the description I really like, two things I like. It says, Maya and George find themselves fighting numerically challenged thugs and hoping they have enough nectarines to see them through. I don't see those kinds of descriptions much in comics. So I kind of found that kind of funny. So I just, now numerically challenged, do you want to talk a little bit about what about these thugs makes them numerically challenged?
So Chris can probably answer this one because I think it was the both of us that came up with the idea, and Christopher was sort of against it, but if you read the book and go to the end, he brings out, what is it, the 13 deadly shadows?
Yeah, I'm sure it makes more sense as the next issues go on, because then you'll see more and more of it type of thing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Sean's been perpetrating it mostly. It's like, well, cause I think what happened is it might have been, I don't know if this is, if I'm remembering correctly, but it might have been where Sean had said, okay, we're going to have the 13, and I'm like, I'm not going to draw 13 characters. So I think it sort of evolved into that sort of thing. I think, if I'm remembering
correctly. Yeah, you know, so this, you know, the guy they're after has the coins, you know, in the first issue is like, you know, die, as most, you know, villains do. They always have these, like, generic thugs. Well, I said, well, he has these guys and he names them. So, like, that one's, it's like the dirt, you know, the 13 deadly desert shadows. And Christopher, like you said, man, I can't draw 13. And I was like, well, just draw 6 and we'll figure it out. And so then it became a running gag that he always says, like, now meet, you know, the 7 killer winds or something like that. And it's, you know, 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Christopher said, as the next issue and more it evolves, the gag sort of becomes, you know, readers will get like, oh, okay, it's not just Christopher being lazy.
Well, I never assume that. Whenever I read a book like that, I always figure you've got something kind of hidden under there that we're going to get to. So I never thought for a second you were cutting back on us, but I was. You know, usually when things like these kind of things happen, that actually when something doesn't make sense, then I really have to read to find out what is really going on here. So I kind of like that about that. I thought that was kind of cool.
And it goes back to one of those things where we didn't know, you know, how people were going to, you know, if people would stick with us to let, you know, sort of the jokes. You know, there's jokes in there, but the punchlines don't come necessarily in that issue. You know, before we, you know, went live, I think I said, you know, humor is subjective. And, I mean, me and Chris both laughed at it. And I think there's an old saying that if you laugh at your own jokes, they're not funny. So we were a bit worried about. I think that's an old adage from stand-up comedians or something. If you laugh, it's not that funny. But, yeah, so it was a risk, you know. But,
yeah. Well, what about nectarines?
That's my wife.
Oh, it is.
She loves nectarines, and so I was. There's sort of touchstones for maybe I think that's the right word for Chris and I's families. There's an homage to my kid. There's an homage to Christopher's daughter, and there's one to my wife. And so, and nectarines I threw in because it seemed to fit a gorilla. And then I was like, you know, I know about people eating 10 pounds of nectarines too.
Well, I like that real well. I mean, you know, the setup is really good, and of course the challenge is going to be to keep this going and keeping us kind of off balance the whole time as we go. How many issues of Go-Getters are you planning to create right now?
It's ongoing is our hope that it'll run forever. You know, until we become big and famous and then it's beneath us. That was the plan. I mean, we didn't approach it as a miniseries. We even pitched it as an ongoing, that it's set up to where, say, every 6 issues is a story arc, but that builds onto a larger arc that may stretch, you know, say, 24 or 30 issues. Then, you know, so it's smaller arcs to build on a larger arc that builds on everything else. And, you know, there'll be stuff that, you know, sort of your own, you know, your standard ongoing where, you know, things you see in the, you know, in issue 3 may pop up again in issue 21. You know, if we make it that far.
So pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's fun. I mean, Christopher, you know, I lucked out in finding him as an artist for something, or him finding me as a writer, I guess. That's how it worked. I just answered a tweet that he'd sent out. And I think it shows in this book that we both really love these characters, and we click on it too. I think of all the things we've worked on, this is the easiest, you know, because the style is just so, it fits it so well. He's really good at facial expressions, which is what sells this book. You know, I don't think it would be nearly half as good. I would say even so, I don't even think it would be 75% of as good if not for him on art and being able to sell the stuff that, you know, you have to sell. you know, as far as visually speaking.
Very cool. Now, one of the things I noticed about the book right off the top, there's a little banner that comes across the top of the cover, and it says, "The Greatest Adventure Comic on Earth!" exclamation point. And I, you know, of course, that always harkens my mind back to, like, the Fantastic Four, the world's greatest comic book, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, what made you guys decide, whose idea was it, and what made you guys to put this on, decide to put this on the cover? Is this going to be on every cover?
Yeah, it was Chris's idea, and he can answer it.
Okay. It was mainly me. I guess because of the, I think it's just part of the personality of the book itself sort of brought that out. It just felt like that to me when I was, you know, sort of designing the cover and thinking about it. And I always liked that sort of catchphrases like that for like the Fantastic Four or whatever. And I think it just sort of, it grabs the personality of what you're about to read type of thing. Like, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, a little bit of cockiness to it and a little bit of self-assurance, or why, I don't know the exact wording of that. It captures Maya's thinking, and because she would probably think, and George would probably think, that they that they would be the, you know, the, these are the greatest adventures that they've, you know, that anyone has ever done ever, and no one can surpass them. Except mm-hmm. for what, you know, they're the best at what they do type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because, you know, on another level, it kind of adds a little humor to it. You know, you kind of go in there with thinking, okay, this is going to be the greatest ever adventure or comic ever. But then, you know, it doesn't take itself very seriously. And so I don't take that quote on the front all that seriously either. But that kind of adds to the light tone of the comic, which I really like.
Yeah. It's just to set people off right on the first page that they that it's... You're going into this to have fun, or, you know, you don't take this too seriously type of thing. Like, you know, we're not being, you know, the most scariest comic ever made or something like that. Like, it's mm-hmm. to get you in the right mood for it type of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that's interesting to me is that so many times these days comics are morose is the only term I can use for it. You're fighting your sister's cousin twice removed on your father's side, you know, kind of thing. And you're all, everybody's emotionally drained from everything that's going on and stuff like that. It's so nice to read kind of a lighthearted adventure thing once in a while instead of all that kind of stuff. So this to me really does that. If you want to get variety in your reading and you want to enjoy a more lighthearted story, this Go-Getters is definitely the one that you want to seek out.
Well, thanks. You know, that's what we sought to do. Like, I had written some, I think with the FUBAR stuff, all of our stuff is pretty heavy. For anybody who doesn't know, FUBAR is an anthology put out by a group of guys from Pennsylvania.
Jeff McComsey.
Becker. And Steve Becker. I was going to name them. Are like sort of the two heads, but they involve a lot of, you know, small press guys. And me and Chris hooked up on a couple of stories on that. And I like, you know, serious... you know, comics and such. The last one we did was pretty heavy, and I think I needed something fun to write, like, back out of that, you know, that was just no pretense of being serious, or there's, you know, no, you know, the moral of the story is kind of stuff. And Chris seemed to be that, I think, that way too, where we just wanted to do something that was fun and ridiculous. And, you know, we're not trying to write laws here. We're just writing a fun comic that, you know, we hope people enjoy. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people who can do serious better than I can. You know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good stuff. I mean, you know, I always love to find something that's different. I don't want to read the same old stuff. And I read Long Johns a lot, and don't get me wrong, I like my Long Johns, but I also like other kinds of stories. I'm interested also in the fact that how diverse your two characters are. There's no, you know, muscular white male to be found in the bunch. You get a muscular white gorilla instead.
Yeah.
And you've got a Hispanic woman, you know, and stuff like that. There's usually a white male involved in these things, and it looks like they're going to be in the villains instead of in the heroes. So I like that a lot. I think that people are going to really find that attractive and interesting to read.
Yeah, and a part of that was Chris draws women really well. Not that he doesn't draw men well either, but again, it goes back to something. I mean, we didn't go into it saying, like, we want to do a girl. It just happened that she ended up a girl and then went from there, and it sort of just fit who she is, I guess. You know, I don't think we or at least in my book, maybe Christopher did, you know, I mean, I'm sure the sort of subtle influence of his daughter watching Dora may have played it. And, but I didn't, you know, I saw the sketch and didn't want to change anything and wanted to do an adventure book too. And, you know, who's to say that the white dudes always have to be the ones, you know, adventuring, you know?
Sadly, that seems to be a staple in comics, and I always regret that, particularly when it comes to women. I mean, I think this we would draw more female readers in if we had more women in leadership roles, and that's when I saw this. I went, oh, right, a woman. I said, a woman's kind of in charge. That's why, you know, whether they're equal partners or not, the fact that she's so prominent in the group and in the story, I just thought, man, women are going to love to read this kind of thing. So this is great.
Yeah. I mean, my wife dug it. Emma dug it, didn't she, Christopher?
Yeah, I think it's her the only. Well, it's probably due to me making it, but but yeah, she enjoyed it too. Because it was also the first comic that she could read of mine, and I'm sure she just didn't. Because she mainly sticks to more properties like IPs, like Zelda and Mega Man and stuff like that, and, like stuff that's already established, right? So this is her first. One of her first tastes of non-licensed character type stories. So, yeah, she enjoyed it.
Very cool. Now, the next thing I have to ask you guys about is Walrus and Egg. I don't want to spoil too much. I want people to buy and read the book. But towards the end of the first issue, we get to meet these two characters. And they are as interesting to me as Maya and George are. Because they're just you know, it's this wacky kind of thing that goes on. And you know, it's obvious they're going to have to, you know, interact with each other towards the end of the book. Where do these characters kind of thing come from, Walrus and Egg? It sounds like almost like the walrus, you know, the story about the walrus. How did you come up with the ideas of the Walrus and Egg characters?
Well, I was wanting to do, and excuse the term, I used an Inuit hitman this was an idea I had years ago, right? And I was going to call him the Eskimo. Well, then I learned that the Eskimo isn't sort of a PC term, and I apologize for any time I had used it. But I just, you know, I sort of like the idea of this hitman who was, you know, sort of just what he was, you know, and that was what all he was known as. But then we go back, we're trying to come up with, we need some people to pop up at the end of this book to further the story. And those two dudes just popped in my head. I mean, you know, the other references, obviously, you know, I Am the Walrus and I Am the Eggman from the Beatles song.
Yeah.
And so that may have been where they're. But Walrus had always sort of been a peripheral character in my brain, and I just changed his name. I just wanted this big hulking dude. And then when it came time for, you know, you'd hear it, it made sense, you know. If you know, again, not to spoil anything, but, I mean, I think anybody, you know, it's not too spoilerific to say that people are going to meet up with George Harrison and want to fight him. So to make it semi-believable, I needed a big hulking dude. And then I wanted the polar opposite of this skinny, and if he was going to be called Egg, just pale guy. And that's what I told Christopher. I was like, I just want a big hulking dude who wears a sleeveless parka and a pale skinny dude in, you know, skinny pants or something, I think. Mm-hmm. And then once I saw his sketches for it, I think that's where the personality sort of blew up. Like, once I saw him, then it all sort of solidified and gave them, you know, the personalities. That'll pop up within the first two pages of issue two. I think the meeting of that bunch happens, and they reveal their whole story, as, you know, villains often do.
Now, Chris, as far as the visuals go, as I've read some of the reviews of it, they often point out how interesting the visuals you're creating are. And they list a couple of them. This one I'm looking at is Maya taking a selfie in the middle of a fist fight in the desert.
Yeah, there's reasons why stuff happens. First of all, before I lose my thought, I always thought the Eggman was for the Beastie Boys, but... that's what always comes to my mind. So, anyhow, the selfie came from, first of all, just I guess because I'm always inundated with it day to day type of thing, right? And at the same time, it was more like where I'm not the greatest fight coordinator, so I didn't know all the things I should just throw into this fight, and I was like doing a bunch of different shots, and I was like, okay, I'm getting tired of people punching each other or kicking each other, so I'm just going to I'll just do this instead. So that's really all it came down to. It's just like I just didn't feel like drawing, you know, more punches. And I just, and then if I, the more I thought about it, because it was more like just a funny thing to think about, and then the more I thought about it, the funnier it got to me. So again, it's one of those, maybe it's only funny to me, but to no one.
Well, aren't we inundated with selfies? I mean, at the Oscars, they did this big selfie and stuff like that. So when I saw her doing that, I had to laugh because, you know, I said it's all the rage right now, you know, to have selfies. So that she did it actually, it kind of planted her close to reality in my mind. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was the sort of play on that, like, you know, as if she had some sort of like Twitter and Facebook that was like constantly being updated while she was doing this sort of stuff. Also, you know, can be played into that too as well. So it's just a fun thing to think about while I was trying to figure out how to make them fight.
Well, you know, another thing people seem to really enjoy is the dune buggy. I see a lot of people talking about how great it is to see a dune buggy involved in the book. And, you know, we don't see those very often, you know, especially people who don't live on beaches like I live outside of Washington, D.C., and I don't see dune buggies very often. And to see that in the book and see how it was using, and somebody makes the point that not only a dune buggy, but you got a white gorilla riding shotgun, skydiving from a C-119. You know, you don't find those kinds of things in many comics, I have to say.
I think it's just all the things that we like, Sean and I, sort of thrown in there. So and this type of story allows us to do that. So, you know, we're like, and I think we just build on each other's ideas. Like, we'll say one thing, and then I'll say, nope, it's going to be like this. And then it's like, yeah, it's going to be like this. And then we do this, you know, and we just keep on, like, adding more and more and throwing more and more onto it. Mm-hmm. So I think we just sort of build on each other. We feed off of each other, just chatting. And Sean will have one idea, or I'll just randomly come up with an idea, and I'll just say it. And whether it sparks something or it gets totally thrown out, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think we have the same sort of sensibilities and humor that we sort of grow off of it type of thing. And the dune buggy, I can't remember exactly how that came along, but I think it's basically, I honestly can't. I can't now. It was just so long ago that I'm sure Sean, I think you said it, and then maybe I model out, or I don't know.
I said, I think, I don't know, it just seemed like the most absurd vehicle to have doing this kind of stuff. So that's why it made sense to me.
Well, there's no protection. You know, if somebody starts shooting at them, what are they going to do? They can't really hide in the dune buggy. There's for all of that. But that's what makes it all kind of lighthearted and fun kind of thing about it. Yeah, I've seen the concepts in the book described as loud and fun. And I think the word loud is an interesting word to use for it. You know, we're so used to subdued things going along, shadows and the Batmobile you can hardly see in the dark and all this kind of stuff. To see something that's really, you know, out front visually and out front as far as, like, adventure goes, it's kind of a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I think I didn't want to, like, decompress it all that much because I don't think it's a style, or I don't think the feel of the book works decompressed, you know. But I didn't want it to be a gag a minute either, you know. I don't want every other line being a punchline for somebody's joke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I've heard people say, like, oh, you know, it's fast-paced. And I was like, really? Because it seems, I'm not saying it's slow-paced, it just seems normal-paced to me. Like, you know, I'm not, like, just running through, you know, story points. But, yeah, loud, you know, it goes back to the humor. I mean, it's just over the top. You know, I mean, when a dune buggy can sneak up on somebody in the middle of the jungle, I think at that point you can just throw out any sense of logic or, you know, and we knew that. I mean, people might, you know, be like, oh, well, you know, this doesn't make sense. I'm like, well, you know, neither does an 8-foot albino gorilla, but it's in there, you know. We're not, you know, it's not like we're being lazy or like we didn't think this through. It's just, it's an absurd book that's meant to be absolutely ridiculously fun. And I guess loud is, you know, I mean, it's, we know when to pull back, but it's not like, you know, we need to pull everything back. Sometimes you just have to let it, you know.
Well, you guys are, I think you guys are doing a good job of the pacing of it. You know, if not everybody understands what the pacing is, that's not a bad thing. I mean, people are being pulled in by what you're doing, and that's a good thing.
And we knew that it wasn't going to work for everybody. You know, some people, it's not, you know, a book for, and those weren't negative. You know, I shouldn't say people were like, oh, this is too fast paced. But it's always just interesting to see, the interpretations of it that maybe you didn't think of yourself.
Now, as far as taking the comic someplace, this Monkey Brain I got to be a fan of like a little over a year ago because they did kind of unique takes on things and interesting stories that you really can't read anywhere else. And so I wasn't surprised when this was a part of that because it's a perfect Monkey Brain comic as far as I'm convinced. So, I mean, how did you guys decide to go to Monkey Brain? How did this whole thing come about?
Well, it was mainly almost coming on a year ago, actually. I went to Emerald City Comic Con, and Chris was there too. And afterwards was hanging out at the place where all the comic book creators hang out, Sheridan, I think, after the show. And Chris Sabella, who writes High Crimes, introduced me to Chris Roberson, who, with his wife Allison, run Monkey Brain. A little back and forth, I told him I loved what they did. I was like, I'd love to pitch for you guys. And he said, cool, send us something. That was pretty much it. So, you know, asked, because they were sort of a, I think they didn't really have open submission. So it was sort of, it was nice to get that sort of like, yeah, we'd like to see something. He knew me from Vic Boone and stuff. And so the opportunity came up and, you know, Chris was the first artist that popped in my mind to sort of do something about it or with it. And then the rest is history, so to say. But I just knew that I had been wanting to pitch for them for a long time, or pitch to them, I should say. Because like you said, their lineup's really diverse, but it seems that people are getting to tell the story. I mean, I know we are. We're getting to tell the story we want to tell. You know, and they're super supportive. And, you know, it's a name that's sort of become synonymous with, you know, quality digital comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it's a great thing because, you know, it's the perfect place to go. And not only that, 99 cents gives people a chance to sample it without necessarily having to buy it like a whole trade at one time. And I get a lot of people who tell me that that's such a great – it's a great jumping on thing for people because if they just go out there and they're intrigued by the concept, they can spend 99 cents and discover if they like it or not.
Yeah, I mean those price points that they have are nice. And I think 99 cents – I mean I've always been a big fan that, you know, digital comics – and I understand the economics that, you know, it's not always the case or, you know. But I've always just felt 99 cents – was sort of the perfect price point for a digital comic. Because like you said, I mean, it's a dollar. Let's round it up to a dollar. If you don't have a dollar to spare, which some people don't, but I'm more willing to risk a dollar on something than I am, say, $4. Because $4 gets me a meal at Jack in the Box. dollar, I'm not really missing out on anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it just works perfectly to me, especially – I see they're adding a lot more quality stuff to there, and of course you guys are part of the latest wave of that. So I sometimes go there and look around and see what I haven't read yet and start to see, well, this sounds interesting, let me try that. And, you know, I've gotten into a lot of stuff on there. So many of them, I can't even begin to name them all because I like it so much. It's something different. And so when I saw this was part of that, I just said, you know, this was the perfect place to go. This belongs in Monkey Brain. And, of course, eventually, because you own the rights, as I understand it, and you get to, if you want to put out a trade eventually, then you can do that and get the money from that, depending on, you know, you shop it around to publishers because now you're going to have product to show them.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of the setup is it's, you know, the physical publishing, you know, rights remain with us. You know, we're free to take offers or to offer it to, you know, any publisher we want. And so that's a nice benefit, you know. Mm-hmm. And, it's a good business model, too, mm-hmm. I think, you know, across the board. And the digital helps you build a brand, you know. It gets people, I think publishers see it as a less risk because they can sort of, you know, roughly speaking, see, you know, hard numbers. Like, okay, mm-hmm. this book is popular on this, mm-hmm.
this level
platform. Let's mm-hmm. move it over to publishing. And mm-hmm. and we're free to do it ourselves, too. I think Chris is doing some for Emerald City, you know, for the first issue. And mm-hmm. I guess we are, but he's, I think, even doing sketch covers.
I'm going to be printing, some... a limited supply of sketch covers for the two conventions I'm going to, which is Emerald City and C2E2. So I'll be making, I think, like 25 sketch cover comics. and see how that goes. And that's kind of the fun about it, I guess, is that we're just allowed to, you know, to do that without having to worry, you know, to set up with a publisher and get previews, distribution, you know, to have to sit there and wait the 3 or 4 months for that type of thing. We can just do it off whenever we want to type of thing.
It's kind of cool. Yeah, great. Now, I read somewhere, and I don't know if this is true or not, but are you guys actually going to have a free comic book day? Is this going to be part of free comic book day in some way?
I know Monkey Brain is, but I don't know what's inside the Monkey Brain free comic book day. I know our names are on it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know what it contains inside. I don't think we're actually in it.
Okay.
We're just on it.
Yeah, well, you guys, they're using your names because you're probably reasonably well-known, particularly in the western part of the states. And, you know, all these kind of things come around and people start to recognize your names. It's good to have people like that, you know, somewhere listed on your comic so that people might pick it up. So I don't blame them for doing that. I find it fascinating that Monkey Brain's actually doing this. I find it interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised. I saw it, I think, fly through on Twitter and was like, I mean, it's cool. You know, I love Free Comic Book Day. I think this is the first time in 3 years or something that I won't have something Free Comic Book Day related coming out, which is, you know, I mean, a shame. My life's not going to end over it, but it's always fun to go to shops on Free Comic Book Day. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good, you know, I don't know the numbers. I'm not saying it, you know, brings in 10,000 new readers every time it happens, but I think it brings in sort of your non-standard readers a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So it's good seeing parents come in with their kids and interacting with people. I just like interacting with people on that level too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, why don't we talk about other projects and things in the future you guys have? Well, Chris, why don't we start with you? Are there other things that you're doing that we should be aware of?
Well, I think we previously know about the Grindhouse comic that I did with Dark Horse. I guess they're collecting the trade for July, I believe, is coming out.
Okay.
So the Bee Vixens from Mars story and the prison ship Antares, I believe that's how I say it. Hopefully I said it right. it's being collected together, and there's a little bit of extra art that was drawn for my story, at least. I don't know about the other one, but for mine, we sort of punched it up a little bit. So that's coming out in July. I have another project coming out just previous to that in June. It hasn't been announced yet, so I probably shouldn't say what it is.
Okay.
And more go-getters, a couple other projects that are still in the works, so I don't know when they're exactly coming out, so I can't say for sure, but I do know about the trade for the Bee Vixens from Mars.
Okay, very cool. So you're keeping busy. That's a good thing.
Yeah, working on it, yeah.
Great. Now, maybe I can ask you, and Go-Getters number 2, that's coming out when?
As soon as I can draw it.
Okay.
Sean has it written up to, like, issue number 4 or so, and it's mainly on me. I have a full-time job, so it takes me a little while to get pages done. Okay. So hopefully sooner than later, these couple of conventions are also going to get in my way a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to already have issue 2 done, but it's not done quite yet. So I can't even say exactly, but I would hopefully say it comes out. What is it going to be made? I would hope May around that point.
Okay, well, you know, quality's worth waiting for, and I don't care if something's a quarterly, as long as the good stuff comes out when it's good and ready to come out. So I'll keep my ear to the ground and looking forward to the Go-Getters number 2 from you. Sean, I want to ask you, is any more your friendly spy there, Vic Boone, coming out anytime soon?
No. I'm trying to figure out what to do with Vic Boone. I mean, more will come out.
Okay.
Eventually. Because I've got to finish at least the next arc. So it's just, when the second one came out, some stuff, you know, when I think the first issue of The Fly Who Loved Me came out, was right around the birth of my son.
Oh.
And so that pushed it a little bit. And then I lost my job shortly after that. And so then I'm a full-time dad, full-time. I put freelance in quotation marks because it wasn't because it was rolling in money. But I was doing the odd job. And then the artist on that arc actually ended up getting married, so that pushed it out. So it's trying to figure out how I want to do it economically, because now it's all on back to me. Like, Big Boon's completely my self-publishing thing now. And so it may actually turn into, so I'm still talking about it, turn into a web series. And then, you know, do like a page a week, full comic book page, and then collect it when it's all said and done into a trade for those who prefer to do it that way. And it sucks. Every time I go somewhere, people ask when it's coming out. And it was just like, man, it just hit in such, for a long time, I thought it was doomed. You know, it was cursed in some way. It just seemed like every obstacle that could pop up could pop up. But Big Boon will ride again. I just can't say like how soon it's going to be. Hopefully sooner than later. And then it'll just come full, you know, because I think the web comic, like, you know, doing self-publishing single issues, you know, the average creator is making 10 cents for every one he sells, you know. Mm-hmm. They got all the other expenses and printing. And I just can't, you know, sustain it like that. So I think webcomic and then printing up a trade at the end. And the trade seemed to do a little bit better than the single issues. And I think he works better as a trade sort of character, if that makes sense.
Cool. I like the title, The Fly Who Loved Me.
Yeah, yeah.
That kills me. You don't know where exactly that would take place yet?
Yeah, like which website? I don't.
Okay.
You know, it may, or I may do it as a Comicology, you know, sort of submit series, too.
Yeah, I talked a couple of weeks ago with Chip Mosier about that, and they were looking for submissions for their publishing thing. So yeah.
I keep trying to throw the first issue up there. I'm just, you know, you watch a two-year-old all day, and you get, you know, 6 o'clock hits when, you know, your shift, quote-unquote, is over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, base on stuff more now than I used to, I guess. You know? But so maybe I'll do that in the next few, at least throw up that issue. But yeah, I mean, it would become, you know, online seems to be some digital format for it, and then collections later seems to be.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, I'll keep my ear to the ground listening for that. How about, are there other projects that we should know about?
There's a few things. You know, I hate to give the same response as Christopher, but there's one that I can't talk about that I'm really excited about that, you know, goes back to the serious tone. It was really depressing to write. but, well, worth it. I think it's decent. But that's coming out through a publisher that I can't, you know, it'll
right.
be there. But then there's, I'm working on a few things now, a few other pitches to look at. One involves a moonshiner going after vampires. and then me and Chris are talking about pitching something else. It's still early in the stage and fitting it into our schedule, you know. I don't want to keep dumping like more projects on them. But that one's pretty, I mean, I guess we tweeted enough about it, but it's called Alice Centauri. And it's essentially Alice in Wonderland in space.
Oh, cool. That sounds fun.
Stuff that nobody had ever done before, but late now, we got it, fellas.
Good.
But yeah, so that, but you know, that's way off, and you know, it's another female lead sort of that we just, you know, fall into subconsciously, I guess. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have ways that people can keep up with what projects are coming out? Like, Sean, do you have, I noticed you had a blog, but I don't think it's been updated in a while.
Nah. Another one of those things that fell by the way. we have Go-Getters. Is it GoGettersComic.com or GoGetters.com, Chris?
GoGettersComic.com.
To get all the latest information on Go-Getters. And then I think that links to both of our blogs. And then we both have Twitter accounts. Mine is at Sean Aldridge, and Christopher's is at Versus Robots.
Yes.
Okay, that one I wouldn't figure out.
There's story behind that to even bother to go into that. It's VS Robots.
Because okay. Some people get these crazy names, and I'm always looking at, like, where in the world do these come from? Because I can understand. Mine is just my name, of course. But, you know, I can find Sean, and I can find other people, but there are some other ones I go out there, and I go, you know, I would never have known that was you if I came across that name. So it's just kind of funny how that works. So it's a good idea to get it out there if you want people to follow you and things like that. So
yeah, it's probably I don't have very many followers because I look more like a bot on Twitter, I guess.
Well, not everybody's on Twitter. I got to tell you something. I have some folks on Twitter that I keep in touch with, and I also on Facebook and stuff, and I'm endlessly promoting my stuff. So I find it helpful. I mean, you know, that because you reach some people with Twitter, you don't with Facebook and stuff. So it's all kind of all over the place. But I kind of like that, and I highly recommend that people go ahead and do that to get your wares, you know, out there in the public eye. So I would do that. But anyway, it's good talking to both of you. And, you know, Sean and Chris, I hope that Go-Getters is a huge success. I'd love to see a trade of it to come along someplace and maybe just have it keep going on for a while and really enjoy the story, because it's this wonderful book that is such a nice mix of the unexpected. And I need that in my comics, I got to tell you.
Thanks, we appreciate it. I mean, there will be a trade from somewhere, you know, when it's all said and done. And I mean, I know I'm in it for the long haul, and I think Chris is too. I mean, even if there's breaks, it'll be, I think it'll always be something we come back to, regardless. Like, it pains me not to be writing them when I'm writing something else sometimes. Because it's just so, because I don't have to over, I mean, there's thinking involved. I don't want to simplify it. But it's just nice to be able to sort of be as goofball as I can be without, you know, having to worry about if it fits the context, because anything can fit in this book. You know, like Christopher said earlier, he'll just randomly shoot out two word idea, and I'm like, yeah, that's in the book now. I'll figure it out when we get there. You know,
it's just a great book, and I highly recommend anybody that wants to read it, go to monkeybraincomics.com. If you work through Comixology, you'll also find it, because I have the app on my iPad, which I can find it as well. So, you know, keep up the great work, you guys. It's such a good read, and I just hope that we can get the word out and get many more people picking it up.
Thank you, man, and thanks for this opportunity to spread the word.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when I have the 125th episode and a very special interview with Wendy Pini of ElfQuest fame. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what she has to say, so be sure to listen in. But until then, keep reading your comics.